Hello, folks. Welcome to Sands, episode number 32. Well, I'm going to do this podcast a little bit differently, so you'll notice a little bit of a change in the way the podcast is done, because we're going to do it the way that I do the rest of the podcasts. And this way, I'm not working with one very large file. And if something's to happen, I know exactly where I am, and if I need to re-record something, I can just re-record that one file instead of trying to find it in one large file. The recording date is the 22nd, and this is going to be for Sands News Bites. This is annotated news update from the leader in information security training, certification, and research for the newsletter that was dated December 16th, 2025. It's volume 27, number 91. And what we're going to do is we're going to read you something as part of the introduction, because this was actually advertised in an earlier newsletter, but because we don't do ads on this podcast, this file, as part of the intro, will have this and the table of contents. So let's start with something that was broadcasted and talked about through Sands as an advertisement. And it was probably an episode or two ago that this particular program that we're going to be reading from took place. I feel even though we don't put ads from Sands in here, this is worth sharing. This comes before the table of contents, which is on page T3 if you don't want to read the following. And if you request a UEB file, which nobody has as of yet, unfortunately the last line will be the only thing on page T3. The table of contents will move to T4. And we will tell you that if you request a UEB file, because I want to let you know where you can skip directly to the table of contents. So, again, this newsletter was for December 16th, so this date that is being mentioned would have been December 14th. And, again, Sands is released on Tuesdays and Fridays. And luckily, I'm only one more episode behind, and we will be completely caught up, and we'll see what the holidays bring. Alright, so that's, and they do mention the dates, but I do want to reference it, and you could search out this if you would like, because the link they gave was not the link, and they said go to youtube.com/live to watch a replay, but it seems to be a different page altogether. So, I'm going to read this, and I really think it would benefit people to hear what the Difference Makers Awards were all about and the people that they honored. So, on Sunday evening, at the Difference Makers Awards, we were reminded of why we do the work we do. We honored people and companies who are committed to making the world a better place through compassion, community, and hard work. Dan Kaminsky was remembered and recognized with the DMA Lifetime Achievement Award based on his embodiment of these principles and his tremendous contributions to the community. Dan is widely known for his 2008 discovery of a major vulnerability in the domain name system, a critical component underpinning the entire internet, and then for his behind-the-scenes rallying of major DNS providers to work together to create a solution to fix DNS before the vulnerability was announced to the world. He was a cybersecurity researcher and frequent speaker at Cybersecurity and Hacker Conference, sharing his unbounded interests in all kinds of technology, focusing on making complex topics understandable and ensuring the security of internet technologies to support human dignity. Dan's research and presentations included such wide-ranging topics as networking, cryptography, this is linguistics, pattern analysis is next, browser attacks, leveraging technology to foster accessibility, and much more. Ed Scoutis. Dan Kaminsky, a.k.a. Daniel Kaminsky, K-A-M-I-N-S-K-Y, February 17th, 1979 to April 23rd, 2021. He was an American computer security researcher. He was a co-founder and chief scientist of human security. And to learn more, you can search Daniel Kaminsky on Wikipedia. Or you may find it in our show notes, as I will make sure to get this into our show notes for this episode. Thank you, Mr. Kaminsky, for the work you were able to do during your time here on Earth. You have been well respected among others in this industry, and we are saddened about your loss of life. Thank you so much again for the work you've done, and may people communicate with each other, and remember that you must include accessibility in your work to include everybody, so that everybody has a form of using software, using hardware tokens, or whatever the security industry decides to use at any given time. This file is transcribed by Jared Reimer in Woodland Hills, California. I liked the way we did the file last time. This may just work. We started with a notation about the recent previous event they advertised in an earlier newsletter. And that again was the awards ceremony that we talked about where they honored Mr. Kaminsky. We didn't put in that advertisement, but I thought this was worth putting. Contact Sans if you want to find out how to stream the item again, as the link provided seems to be going somewhere else that was streamed live at one point. Now here's our table of contents for today's episode of this program. For top of the news, we have Apple WebKit and Google Chrome 0 days exploited and patched. Next, more React vulnerabilities. I should probably ask right now, are you surprised? Item number 3, CISA adds Geo Server and Sierra vulnerabilities to Kev. Here's the rest of the week's news. First, MITRE, 25 most dangerous vulnerabilities of 2025. 2, Microsoft is deprecating RC4 cipher. 3, JLR follow-up, payroll data breached. That's not good. 4, Prosper and 700 credit disclose breaches, and the total number is not necessarily bad, but it could have been a lot worse. 5, Coupon follow-up. And finally, French Ministry of the Interior's email system suffers cyber attack. All right, folks, we will continue with more of the podcast as we've now moved to page number 1 of the file. We will continue with more of Program 32 in just a moment. Alright folks, welcome back to Sans. This is episode number 32, and we are now going to start with top of the news. And I want to remind you that you can also have your say. Email or iMessage tech, that's TECH at MENVI.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call the comment line at 888-405-7524. Find out more about me by going to my website at jaredrimer.net, where there is a contact form you can fill out, and you can find out all of the info that is available for you to use to contact me. Let's start with top of the news with item number 1, and this is titled Apple WebKit and Google Chrome 0 days exploited and patched. Apple released advisories on December 12, 2025, including fixes for 2 flaws reportedly exploited in an extremely sophisticated attack against specific targeted individuals, both of which have been added to to the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's CISA's Known Exploited Vulnerabilities KEV catalog. Both flaws affect WebKit in Apple products before iOS and iPadOS 18.7.3 and 26.2 and version 26.2 of macOS Tahoe, Safari for macOS, tvOS, watchOS, and visionOS. Basically, the whole gamut of Apple. CVE 2025-43529 allows an attacker to carry out memory corruption and achievement of arbitrary code execution using malicious crafted web content due to a use after free vulnerability. I may have gone ahead and emphasized this a little bit by saying and an achievement of, but it actually only says and achieve arbitrary code execution using malicious crafted web content due to a use after free vulnerability. This is not the first time we've talked about remote code execution. And this is probably not the first time you've heard of malicious crafted web content. So we know that it's delivered by web. And this is why it's very important to go ahead and get the idea of making sure your software is up to date. I believe I'm running 17.3 because I went to check my phone and it's only giving me 26.2. Or 18.7.3 anyway. They continue to write, CISA notes that CVE 2025-43529 could impact HTML parsers that use WebKit, including but not limited to Apple Safari and non-Apple products which rely on WebKit for HTML processing. CVE 2025-14174 allows a remote attacker to perform out-of-bounds memory access using a crafted HTML page due to a flaw in the almost native graphics layer engine angle graphics library, which is used in both WebKit and Google Chrome. Google also released a patch for this flaw on December 10th, tracking the flaw as 466192044 before the CVE was issued, and crediting Apple Security Engineering and Architecture, SEAR, that's S-E-A-R, and Google Threat Analysis Group with discovery. Microsoft Edge and Vivaldi browsers have also received fixes for CVE 2025-14174. Neely writes, in short, Apple released updates for all their OSs. And Safari to address the WebKit flaws. If you're keeping score, this is the ninth zero day for Apple and the eighth for Chrome in 2025. And yes, we talked about the eighth vulnerability in last episode. The Apple updates also include bug fixes that your version 26 users will appreciate. Use them to sweeten the pot on getting the updates deployed now. When pulling updates for my phone, I write, it only gave me 26.2, even though I'm still on 18.x. Maybe I should update to 26.2. It fixes accessibility issues like mail stuff and others too in the 26.x series. And I know this because I do still look at AppleVis, where it talked about the release notes of 26.2. So maybe it might be time for that to come about. I guess we'll see how things go. The year is going to be coming to an end, and that's basically 1 zero-day a month for these two companies alone. And the fact of the matter is that they are going ahead and they are doing things right and making sure that they get fixed immediately. I don't know if I can say this about other companies on a consistent basis when it comes to 0 days, although Microsoft does try, but I think as you'll read on the tech blog, Microsoft breaks things more than they fix it. And that concerns me when I'm asking people to assist with a computer. Let's move on now to our next item. And this is titled, More React Vulnerabilities. Three more vulnerabilities have been detected in React server components. The first vulnerability, CVE-2025-55182, was disclosed with patches available on December 3rd and was added to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's CISA's Known Exploited Vulnerabilities CAV catalog on December 5th. While this flaw initially had a mitigation deadline of December 26th, CISA moved the deadline up 2 weeks to December 12th due to widespread reports of active exploitation, and this was covered on Program 31, which was the last episode of the newsletter for December 12th. The additional vulnerabilities are CVE 2025-55184, a high severity deserialization for untrusted data issues, CVE 2025-6779, a high severity issue detected when it was determined that the fix for CVE 2025-55184 was incomplete, and CVE 2025-55183, a medium severity vulnerability that could lead to information leaks. And first of all, I'm confused about the fact that they're releasing these numbers in random order over there at MITRE, or whoever's running the CVE database these days. Because wouldn't you have expected them to give the 183 number to the first vulnerability they supposedly patched? And I use that loosely because now we know that it wasn't patched, and 183, while it could be related, is something completely different. I mean, the numbers here don't really match, and I've been meaning to comment on that for a while. Neely writes, "Time to paint the bridge again. While it's easy to armchair quarterback, the reality is they didn't get a full fix in the effort to respond quickly to the flaw. No shit." Even so, Neely continues, the further issue was rapidly addressed. Roll out the update, then see how your developers would handle a scenario like this. Make sure they have the top cover to execute successfully. And I say no shit, because rushing a patch without properly testing it is bad. And I'm not going to say whether they did that or didn't do that, but that's exactly what it seems like to me. They rushed this to try and beat a deadline, and, well, they blew it. Technically, under ZDI, you have 90 days before they come out with it. I don't know what methods were used to report these, but typically you're given some time to fix these issues. It's not a day, it's not 2 days, it may not even be a week. It may be 30 days at least to get a patch out. I personally would like to see it faster, but understand that testing and making sure this is right should trump any deadline. If a patch is rushed, just like 184 was, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to have to issue another CVE and yet another patch, taking up more space on an already crammed hard drive full of programs that people need to use and try and keep up to date. Item number 3 in your top of the news is more CISA stuff. CISA adds GeoServer and Sierra vulnerabilities to KEV. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has added a high severity improper restriction of XML external entity reference vulnerability in GeoServer CVE 2025-58360 to the known exploited vulnerabilities KEV catalog. In November, GeoServer maintainers notated that the application accepts XML input through a specific endpoint /GeoServer/WMS operation getmap. However, this input is not sufficiently sanitized or restricted, allowing an attacker to define external entities within the XML request. The flaw affects all versions of GeoServer up through 2.25.5, as well as versions 2.26.0 through 2.26.1. The vulnerability has been fixed in versions 2.25.6, 2.26.2, 2.27 flat, that's 2.27.0, 2.28 flat, 2.28.0, and 2.28.1. The Canadian Center for Cybersecurity has updated its advisory on the GeoServer vulnerability to note that an exploit for the flaw exists in the wild. The vulnerability has a mitigation due date of January 1st, 2026 for U.S. federal civilian executive branch agencies. Shodan has observed more than 14,000 exposed GeoServer instances. CISA has also added a high severity unrestricted file upload vulnerability in Sierra Wireless AirLink Alios routers CVE 2018-4063 to the KEV catalog. Cisco Talos reported the vulnerability to Sierra, which is based in Canada, in December 2018. The vulnerability was publicly disclosed in April 2019. Because the product has reached end of support, FCEBs are asked to discontinue its use or update to a supported version by January 2nd, 2026. Other recently added vulnerabilities include a hard-coded credential issue, but this says a hard-coded credentials issue in Gladinet. This is CenterStack. C-E-N-T-R-E stack. So Gladinet Center Stack and TreeFox, TrioFox CVE 2025-146-11, and two flaws covered in this issue of News Bites: an out-of-bounds memory access flaw in Angle in Google Chrome on Mac prior to 143.0.7499.10 CVE 2025-14174, and a use after free vulnerability in WebKit affecting multiple Apple products, CVE 2025-43529. And this goes back to me wondering why they're just randomly giving CVEs. This is confusing to me. I think the CVE should follow a certain pattern. Start at zero, go through as many CVEs as you need to cover the entire platform. You're not going to have 999,999,999,999,999 CVEs. And even if you do, we can go under the quintillions, but I'm confused with the way all of these CVEs are randomly generated. And while I understand, like, 551282, 83, and 84 were, you know, given to the same company, this is very confusing. Maybe I need to go read more about how all of this works, but maybe you're just as confused as I am. Neely writes, "The Sierra flaw is 6 years old, and you should have applied the update long ago." No, I'm just going to sit here and let my computer rot while it doesn't get patched. Even so, if you're running their LS300, JX400, JX440, ES440, JX450, ES450, MP79, MP70E, RV50, RV50X, LX40, or LX60 devices, you're on the patched supported firmware. Also, make your make sure you're using strong authentication, limiting access to the management interface, and that management is performed over SSL. It just says, also make you're using strong authentication. So I added the word sure to that. It was probably a mishap. All right, folks, that completes the top of the news. I'm Jared Reimer. Make sure if you are using these products that you do patch. It's important to do that. You don't want to be running patchless at this time. Please feel free to contact me by sending me email or iMessages at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call my comment line at 888-405-7524. Or you may learn about me through my website at jaredreimer.net. We will be back with more of the podcast as we move into our rest of the news set coming right up. Program, and now it's time for the rest of the news. And depending on what file you're using, you're probably going to be on page 7. It's a possibility that you could be on page 8 if you've requested a Unified English Braille file. I don't create them by default, but I can make them available upon request. Let's start with item 1 of this section. And this I found quite interesting. MITRE, this is the agency, by the way, that deals with all the various common vulnerability and exposure numbers that you see. That's the various CVEs we're talking about when we talk about vulnerabilities and bugs in software. This item says, MITRE, 25 most dangerous vulnerabilities of 2025. MITRE has published its annual 25 Most Dangerous Software Vulnerabilities report. The list is compiled based on analysis of vulnerabilities present in more than 39,000 CVEs. Again, common vulnerabilities and exposures. 39,000 of these things. Cross-site scripting, XSS, occupies the top spot on MITRE's 2025 list, followed by SQL injection and cross-site request forgery, CSRF. Missing authorization and out of bounds right. Other vulnerabilities appearing on the list include code injection, OS command injection, path traversal, out of bounds read, and use after free. MITRE has also published a methodology page to clarify how the list was compiled. That's a lot of CVE numbers, I'd say, I write. Whether it's called CVE or CWE in other cases, it's a lot of data. And of course, the CWE is relatively new, but I want to bring it up here. Neely writes, when I see a list like this, I try to find themes to simplify the message to others. Input validation, sanitization, and misplaced trust are recurring issues across these CWEs. And that's why I was mentioning the CWE, because I remember putting the comment in from Neely, which we're reading. Be dogged in making sure all external input is checked, no matter the source. Another thread is authorization and access control. Watch for end-arounds and weak authentication. Strong MFA is essentially turnkey these days, so your developers can focus on implementing good ACLs. Make sure you have process to validate access granted, removing it when no longer needed. Murray writes 39,000 CVEs, almost none of which will ever be completely patched. Perhaps not even every instance of these 25. Dukes also has great comments. Read them in the newsletter. And I will say this. This is not easy work. Okay? Making sure every piece of software is up to date that you could ever use, as well as making sure your computer has enough space to install every little update, is challenging. Especially when the software phones home. This is why when I eventually get a new computer, I'm only installing the necessary things that I would be utilizing, including Adobe Acrobat, Braille 2000, GoldWave, Dropbox, Google Drive, Thunderbird, and Firefox. I think my game time playing is over, even though I would love to play some games again, but I don't even think about it much these days. And honestly, since Adobe's gotten so big, it takes up a lot of word processing power just by its nature of being there, because it has to phone home. And of course, it has all of these other components that come with it that it forces you to try or buy or what have you that you probably don't even want. So maybe Adobe Acrobat won't be on that computer, but I should have some version of Word on the machine, but again, it wants to install Office 365. So I'm better off with Google and Google Drive and its products. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. We'll figure it out when we get there. The point is that each piece of software has to be updated, and it has to phone home, and it has to go do its job, and you have to have the space to do this. And this includes your access technology. Whether you use JAWS, which is now probably about 2 gigs in size with all of what it can do, or NVDA, which has an add-on system which allows you to use it. And of course, you can use it without add-ons, but it could limit you in what you do depending on how you use the computer. All of this takes space, and you have to account for all that space. I'm not saying my father made a mistake when buying me the computer. I think he said it was a 300 gig drive, but it only shows 118 gigs, and it's completely full, and I still think I broke Windows when trying to figure out what to do about this full hard drive problem. And sadly, there's nothing more I can do. I'm just gonna have to use the computer for what it is, and hopefully I can get one, and maybe just downgrading to a laptop, and maybe taking my other 4 terabyte drive, which is in a housing unit, from this computer to the other, will just solve the issue. And yes, I could, in theory, put Station Playlist and Creator on that machine, but remember, it's a laptop, so I don't know if I want it broadcasting all day and all night. I could make it work, but yeah, I think between the two machines, I could definitely make it work. But I digress. I think I can work, record, do Braille and other things on the new machine while making sure that broadcasting goes on this machine, and I think I'll be just fine. This is Jared Reimer. This is Sans number 32. Folks, let's move along now to our next item in the newsletter. And this one is kind of interesting because what we're about to talk about, most people may not be too familiar with. Not unless you've listened to shows like Security Now, which I've heard is kind of dry from people, but they do a good job. I've known of Steve Gibson for many, many years. In fact, my father was a customer of Steve's and owned a copy of SpinRite, the disk maintenance and recovery program. He has mentioned, Steve anyway, has said that it can work with access technology if you put the right things in place to be able to get a synthesizer to speak to you as part of the process of booting onto that particular drive. But it is a good program, and those who are sighted, you'll be able to get a good advantage of it, because it could tell you exactly what's going on with your drive and it'll help you fix it and keep it running. In fact, he said using it on a regular and using it as a preventative maintenance tool can make your drive last longer. But he actually talked, Steve has, about these types of things that we are about to get into here with this item, which is why I mentioned Steve in passing. They've released over 1,200 podcasts and still going strong. I get their podcasts, I just haven't had time to listen to them all. But there are so many podcasts out there, and I've even been told that I should check out this other podcast, and I did say, yes, I'm aware of this podcast, but there's so many people out there and not enough time to listen to everything. With that being said, Steve talked about this RC4 cipher when it comes to encryption. And he's talked about it in a way where people who are not technical can understand what this is and why people should move away from it. And the item we are talking about today will be titled, Microsoft is deprecating RC4 cipher. Yes, ciphers. This may be something that isn't going to be quite as instant as Steve would probably like it to be. If he read this newsletter, but progress is always slow in this industry. Microsoft has announced this, it is deprecating the Rivest cipher for RC4 encryption cipher that Windows has supported since 2000 with the rollout of Active Directory. Despite the fact that the cipher's source code was leaked in 1994, RC4 remained in regular use for another 2 decades. While Microsoft Active Directory has been updated to support AES, Windows servers have continued to respond to RC4-based authentication requests and return an RC4-based response by default, making it easier for attackers to steal account credentials. By the middle of next year, Microsoft will be updating domain controller defaults for the Kerberos Key Distribution Center, KDC, on Windows Server 2008 and later to only allow AES SHA-1 encryption. And SHA-1, which is SHA, by the way, is, I believe, pretty good. RC4 will be disabled by default and only used if a domain administrator explicitly configures an account or the KDC to use it. I write, I thought RC4 was discontinued years ago, as Security Now mentioned at one point it was becoming insecure. And this was when I was, by the way, listening to this program on a regular. I really should, because they do cover the landscape just like we do, and they are a good podcast, and they cover things differently than we do. So do check them out. I don't remember when I heard it, but I know it has been years. The fact Microsoft is doing this will be amazing. Neely writes, while your first reaction may be to just disable RC4, you'll want to see if it's in use first. Microsoft has added fields to Kerberos events 4768 and 4769 to allow you to detect RC4 and have published PowerShell scripts that read this information so you know which accounts are still RC4 only and which don't support AES. The goal is to make sure accounts and devices are enabled for AES, then disable RC4. I can agree, seeing that people may want to just disable this insecure item, but I would follow his advice here, folks. Murray writes, while quantum computing may reduce the time to break an RSA key to hours or days as early as 2030, RSA will likely last forever. We create tens of thousands of RSA keys per hour. Cryptography fails slowly, not suddenly. The advantage is always to the cryptographer, never to the cryptoanalyst. The cost to the cryptographer rises linearly, while that to the cryptoanalyst rises exponentially. Just an interesting anecdote I thought I would put into the podcast because it could be that true. Now, I'm not familiar with how all of these works. I let the people more familiar with these things speak on it. I know that we've moved into different key structures for SSL, and again, I'm not versed in that, but I understand the idea of what's happening. So, there you go. That's what I've got for you on this one. It's an interesting time, folks. Very interesting time. May do so by email or iMessage at tech, that's TECH, at MENVI.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call the comment line 888-405-7524. If it goes to voicemail, please leave a voice message. If you do not leave a voice message, then we have no way to know that you're calling. Even if we look at call logs, it could be days or weeks after the fact. And since we don't have your phone number on file, and just because I see a phone number calling doesn't mean that I can reach somebody because lots of phone numbers dial lots of phone numbers, right? So we want to make sure that we're calling back legitimate folks who need assistance or need a callback. And as I've stated before, the last time I had this type of a service, we would call some of these numbers back, and the callers would say that they didn't call, yet the numbers showed up in the call logs, meaning that people would spoof the phone number, dial in to the comment line like that one, and when they don't get what they're looking for, they hang up. So, if you leave a call print on the comment line. Don't expect a callback unless you leave that voicemail. And we thank you in advance for doing that. This way, we know who we're dealing with. In recent days, I've been looking at my call logs and see a bunch of phone numbers that I've never gotten voicemail for, although I did recognize one phone number because they also called the 804 number and at least left a voicemail there, and I already called them back and apologized that it took me a while to call them back because I didn't see the message right away. But they understood. So I want to let that be known that we do take your privacy securely, and we will not call phone numbers back just out of the blue. You have to contact us first. Now, let's talk about our next item on the list, and this one is dealing with JLR. This is a follow-up, and it's titled JLR Follow-Up Payroll Data Breached. This can't be good. Jaguar Land Rover, JLR, has confirmed that the perpetrators of the August 2025 cyber attack stole personal data from the company's payroll system, affecting both current and former employees. JLR told the Telegraph, from the ongoing forensic investigation, JLR believes that certain data related to current and former JLR employees and contractors was affected by the cyber incident. We remain in dialogue with the relevant regulators, and we are in the process of contacting current and former employees and contractors as necessary. The breach has resulted in significant losses for the company and is predicted to have repercussions on the UK economy overall. Neely writes, JLR isn't out of the woods yet. They prioritized getting systems and production back online, which is likely how their DR plan is structured. Make sure you know what the priorities are in your plan to include notifications of those affected by loss of sensitive information. As a consumer, recognize that letting you know your information is lost may not be priority one for a company. Take steps to protect yourself accordingly. While I can agree with some of this being that a company may not notify you as their first priority, I write, make sure it should be within a certain time period, and I would say make sure that you do this within a certain time period, and it should be done in a certain time period when it is safe to do it. So if you're in the middle of an investigation, and I'm talking at the moment, not reading, then complete your investigation. But as soon as you know that it is safe to talk about what is going on, then do your notifications, do your PR, and as I write, don't take 6 months to a year to notify us. Do it within 30, 60, or even 90 days. Investigations take time, but it should not take 6 months to a year. That's too long. There are other comments by two other editors within this section, and I am telling you that you, in theory, should look at what they have to say because they have done the research. I'm a podcaster. I can just give you my comments based on what I'm reading, or even if I have read an article on this, they may not tell the entire story. So, just be aware of what's going on. And know that a company may not have your best interest in mind, but know that we should not find out 6 months to a year later. 3 months, 6 months, still a little too long. 30 days, maybe 60. That would be fair enough. But I would even like to see it faster. And we're not done talking about breaches and notifications. We'll have more of that discussion coming up as the podcast continues across the Jared Reimer Radio Network. All right, folks, this is probably as bad as it's been. Now, the numbers you're going to hear are probably not going to be surprising, knowing that there have been bigger numbers than what you're about to hear. But this is probably as bad as it's been in a long time. Prosper and 700 Credit disclose breaches. Data security breaches at Prosper and 700 Credit have compromised personal information belonging to roughly 19 million people. Okay? 19. That's bigger than some, but smaller than others. Prosper Marketplace, a peer-to-peer lending firm, detected a breach on September 1st, 2025, and notified regulators. Intruders had access to company systems between June and August 2025. The Prosper breach affected more than 13 million people, and the compromised data include general identification data as well as financial account, payment card, and tax data. 700 Credit. a company that provides credit reports, ID verification, and related services to car dealerships will begin notifying approximately 5.8 million people that their personal information, including basic identification information, including social security numbers, was compromised. The 700 credit breach occurred through an integration where the intruder discovered an API that allowed access to customer information. The partner company did not inform 700 Credit of the incident. Instead, 700 Credit detected unusual activity on its systems in late October and launched an investigation. Between the two companies here, we're talking about close to 20 million people. As stated above, don't take 6 months to a year to notify them. Get on it when the investigation is complete and it's safe to do so. And this company did that. We're talking September, October. The news is coming out in December. This seems fair enough. And while I know that I'm still behind and trying to catch up on SANS itself, the news is out there, and that's what matters. Neely writes, takeaways from the 700 credit incident include the importance of understanding incident notification processes for third parties as well as verification of security practices, particularly API security, which is harder with a third party. Make sure you understand what your obligations are for a third party breach. Your customers likely don't care where the fault lies and will look to you to be made whole. So you need this squared away with finance, legal, and management before you need it. Then, double check how frequently you're verifying the security of your third-party providers to include verification of the relationship. Dukes writes, first off, 19 million, as he writes it, 19M. That's a big number for two cyber incidents. APIs, by definition, are designed for integration. With that integration comes complexity, which greatly increases one's attack surface. The 700 credit cyber incident is a good reminder about supply chain attacks and the need for incident reporting to be part of the service level agreement, SLA. And I'll leave it at that because, you know, I mean, Yahoo, which now Verizon owns, had a breach of $3 billion. That's practically their entire user base last we knew. And we didn't find out for years. The fact that we're finding out about this in about 2 months, give or take, is good. This falls within what I think should be fair. 30 to 60 days. 90 maybe. But enough of the 6 months to a year or longer. But I suspect this will continue to be the case as we push forward into the new year. Don't be a statistic. report it when you can, like this company has, and do make sure that you are doing what you can to be as secure as you can. We understand mistakes happen. Just make sure you learn from them in the end. All right, folks, this is our next item talking about Coupang, and this is titled Coupang Follow-Up. Police in Seoul, South Korea, are investigating a breach at online mega retailer Coupang. The company suffered a breach in late June 2025. That compromised data belonging to 33.7 million customers. So here we go again, folks. Here we go again. This is more than the two before, and it's not getting any better. The incident was not detected until November 18th and was disclosed on December 1st. The breach has been attributed to a former employee who had worked on an authentication management system and maintained access to an internal system following departure from the company. Police raided Coupang offices as part of their investigation, gathering digital forensic evidence, including documents, logs, system records, IP addresses, access credentials, and access history. While the breach has been attributed to the unnamed individual, Coupang could be held liable if the company is found to have been negligent. I write, seems to me that the company should be held responsible. Sounds like they did not do what they needed to do after the employee left the company for whatever reason. We've seen this on several newsletters lately, and even in the news in recent times. When are companies going to learn? And I wrote that as a question, but I might as well just be angry. Dukes has a point saying that the court will decide liability, and my point wasn't to say whether they should be held liable legally for this, but they need to be held responsible in removing employees when needed, and yes, Dukes says in a timely manner. He writes, yet another reminder for companies to have a well-rehearsed process in place for the removal of employees from employment. The documented process should engage direct supervisors, HR, talent management, that's in parentheses, IT, and here I go again, not fixing IT, but that's okay, I knew what it was, but this is supposed to be IT there, and legal. Most importantly, immediately upon notification of employee removal, access to the building and IT systems should be restricted. As far as whether Coupang is liable, the court will decide. That said, failing to remove access to all company systems upon termination is not demonstrating reasonable cyber security. I could not say this any better myself, and we've said this time and time again, that these companies just don't learn. They do the same crap all the time, and we're just not learning. We're not learning anything. We're just out there doing our thing. Maybe we get fired. We go about our day. Maybe some people will take revenge for their firing. Most will not. But why, as a company, are you willing to take that chance? You fired them, or they left for a reason. Why are you going to do this? Is it worth all the publicity you're getting? Food for thought, isn't it? Alright, folks, this is probably our last item, if I remember this correctly. This has taken me several days to record because my Braille display that I'm using needed a power cord. French Ministry of the Interior's email system suffers cyber attack. France's Minister of the Interior, Laurent Nunez, stated to French media outlet RTL that a cyber attack against the country's Ministry of the Interior took place overnight from December 11th through 12th, 2025. The attacker accessed email servers and certain files, but Nunez contends that there is no evidence of serious compromise. Whether information was stolen has not yet been determined. The ministry is responding by enacting its standard protection procedures and is working to strengthen security and tighten system access. The nature, scope, and origin of the attack remain under investigation. Bleeping Computer notes that the Ministry of the Interior supervises police forces and oversees internal security and immigration services. First, in my opinion, I would not publish anything until my investigation is complete. Sounds like this is early news, and I think we'll learn more over time. If this is early news, I write, keep updating appropriate pages and the press with your findings as you go along. That's the best we can ask for at this point. And yes, I do see that two words were put together in Braille. Sorry, Braille readers. Just saw this. Didn't realize that after the fact. I.e., after I wrote it and before it went into Braille. Neely is writing something similar to what I wrote above, but probably more precisely. He writes, they are in an interesting spot. A successful attack occurred, and they are taking measures to tighten security, which may impact users, so disclosing the event is warranted. The current notification is lacking impact, as well as in instructions or contacts for those impacted. Make sure your notifications are clear and include this information. Great thoughts, Neely. We are thinking alike. And as I wrote there, seems like this is new material. It's a new investigation. It is basically lacking information we can't put our teeth into. And I understand why they did this. Because you would rather be safe than sorry and say, yes, we did put this out on the internet for everybody to have, because we didn't know how bad it was, but we did have an issue. And you could say, I did this too, especially when we broke things on the mix. When I talked about this on an earlier podcast, not on SANS itself, but maybe on a TSB or a tech program, and I talked about what we did, and I may have blogged about it after the fact, but I did blog about this, and then I blogged a full thing about what happened and what I did and what I learned and everything else. So, you know, if this type of thing happens, and this is an early indication, this may not be so bad. But do keep in mind that if you start updating us, that's good. Because you want people to know right away. You start updating us by saying, look, here's the problem. Here's what we know so far. But continue those updates. That will give you credibility. And that will give you brownie points into making sure that you're doing everything you can. Yes, we detected this cybersecurity incident. Yes, we notified you when we were aware of it. And yes, we updated everybody accordingly when we knew what was going on. That I'm okay with. I'm actually okay with the way that this ministry is doing things. I don't like the fact that there's very little information, but as long as they continue to update us in the process, or even just update their citizens, not necessarily the whole internet, but update their citizens on what's going on by talking to their people through their press, then I think this is fine. And I don't honestly have a problem with it. Editorial board of SANS News Bites. Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris Elge, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vautrinot, and William Hugh Murray. Sands Institute is located at 11200 Rockview Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. Email support@sands.org or call 301-654-7267 if you need assistance with subscription services. This completes the podcast for Sands Episode 32. I'm Jared Reimer. Thank you so much for listening to today's program, and I hope that you have enjoyed it as much as I have bringing it to you. And as we recently found out, we are getting new listenership, so welcome aboard. Please feel free to contact me by email or iMessage by sending me an email at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. You can send an iMessage to that too. If you would like to send a text message, you may text me or use WhatsApp at area code 804-442-6975. Again, that's 804-442-6975. Or, as I discussed earlier in the program, please leave a voicemail at 888-405-7524. If I'm available to take your call, I'll do so. But remember, don't leave a footprint and expect me to call you back, because numbers do call in. They may be missed dials. They may not even be calling to begin with. And I don't want to be responsible for calling phone numbers that do not intend to contact the network. So please, leave that message. Otherwise, you will not be able to be acknowledged, because I don't know who's calling from any given phone number. If I recognize a phone number that I know of, I may call back, but that really may be unlikely because I don't go through logs every day. For your protection, contact is the first step, and by doing so and hearing that you need to leave a voicemail is the first step of communication. We thank you very much for listening to the program, and we will see you again on another edition of the program very soon. We're just about caught up with Sands, and I believe I have one more episode to get into Braille before the next one, and that'll be my next progress report. I don't know whether they will be releasing Sands during the Christmas week. We'll figure that out when it's time for them to release their next newsletter. If we don't get one, we don't get one. If we do, we do. We'll push forward and get them out as quickly as we can during the holiday break. I thank you so much for listening, and do make it a great day.